everyone. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio, the show that gives you the facts about relationships and love. Now, I've been helping individuals and couples improve their relationships for the past 30 years, and today I'm here to give you science-based strategies for your relationships and those of your children. Welcome, welcome, everyone. It's Dr. Terry. Thanks so much for joining me today. I appreciate you. Now, did you know that people around the world are more miserable than ever before? And according to Gallup's new 2018 Global Emotions Report, our daily experiences of worry, sadness, stress, anger, and pain have hit the highest levels. But even in these trying times, listeners, happiness is attainable, and shortcuts to happiness are all around us. My guest today is Dr. Tal Ben-Shahar. He obtained his PhD in organizational behavior from Harvard University, and for the last 15 years, he has taught leadership, happiness, and mindfulness to audiences around the world. He is the co-founder of the Happiness Studies Academy and author of 6 best-selling books. His latest book is called Shortcuts to Happiness, Life-Changing Lessons from My Barber. To learn more about Tal and his books, visit talbenshahar.com. So welcome to the program, Tal. So nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Terry. It's great to be here.
Yes. Now, tell us, the book title is so interesting. What inspired you to write your latest book, Shortcuts to Happiness?
So this was just before I was boarding a flight, and it was after another flight. I was stressed. I was unhappy, but I needed a haircut. So I went to my barber. 20 minutes later, I had a haircut and a much better mood. And I thought to myself, then I should write a book about this guy because he's been helping many people, not just myself, not just look better, but also feel better. And I started writing a book, and for 2 years, I did that without him knowing it. So I would actually jot down pearls of wisdom each time I or my kids went for a haircut. And after 2 weeks, 2 years, I asked for his permission, given that this is a co-authored book, and he gave it.
Wow, how interesting. But tell us, you know, that first time when you were in the airport and you didn't feel so great and you were tired and stressed, what did he say to you that changed your mood so much?
So, you know, the thing that he says to me and to others are very often commonsensical ideas. For example, then in particular, it was about just appreciating what's around us and within us, looking at the small things, those mini treasures that are so precious and are actually the building blocks of a happy life. You know, we often think it's, you know, it's the big accomplishments or the big events that are the source of happiness, and they at best lead to a temporary high. The day-to-day, the small things, they are the real bricks that make up the happy path.
And, you know, it's so interesting, Tal, because I do research on relationships. And when people think about their relationships, they're always thinking about these big monumental things that they can do on Valentine's Day or an anniversary for their partner or with their partner. And I have found in my research exactly what you just said, that it's the simple little things that make our partners happy, that make our relationships happy. So give us some of those shortcuts to happiness that you argue are right in front of us and that we often miss or neglect.
Yes. So, you know, as you just said, relationships are right up there. Relationships are the number one predictor of happiness. So many of the listeners may be familiar with the famous Harvard relationship study, where they followed Harvard graduates from the time they were 18, or Harvard students from the time they were 18 years old, as well as community members from around Cambridge. And they followed them for 75 years. So for most of them, it was for the rest of their lives. And they collected literally millions of data points. And they found that the best predictor of both happiness as well as health was none other than relationships. Now, the interesting thing is it didn't matter what relationships, meaning for some of them it was mostly about romantic relationships, one or a couple. For some of them it could be family relationships. For others it was close intimate friendships or business relationships. It didn't matter. But having these relationships was critical for a happy life as well as a healthy life.
And I love that. I really so well. And that's so important what you're saying to listeners, that having any relationship, a happy, healthy, positive, loving relationship, is so important to our health and our well-being, our depression, our anxiety, as you said, our moods, our happiness, as well as how we feel physically and our health. So if we're a listener out there and we want to change our mood, we're one of the people who is stressed, we're not feeling so great, we're anxious. What are some examples that either your barber, Avi, or you talk about to boost our mood?
Yeah, so the first thing really that we need to do in order to experience more happiness is allow in unhappiness. You see, so many people are afraid of being unhappy, are afraid of sadness or anxiety or envy or anger. They're afraid of these emotions and they reject them. This is especially true today because around us on social media, what we see are people who are perfectly happy in a perfect relationship, in a perfect family, in the perfect job. And we look at them and we reflect on our life, and our life is not perfect. And then we think there is something wrong with us. And then we don't allow in unhappiness. Whereas if we accept the fact, fully embrace the fact, that being sad or angry or anxious at times is natural, if we embrace that, these emotions, paradoxically, they actually go away. They disappear, and we open ourselves up to happiness.
Wow, that is so interesting. And by the way, I'm not good at that either, listeners. I don't know about you, Tal, but I want to quickly change and don't allow myself, or I think my friends, to accept and allow the negative emotions. So yeah, how do we do that? How do we accept or allow it?
Yeah, Terry, and this is very important in the context of relationships, whether our own emotions or others. So one of the things, you know, people get together, you know, they fall in love, and then the expectation is that they'll live happily ever after. And by that, they mean happiness all the time. And that's not true. We know that the best relationships are not ones that are devoid of conflict or painful emotions. These relationships are detached if they are devoid of painful emotions, and they won't last. The real relationships, the ones that last, the ones where a couple or a family or an organization, by the way, grow over time, are relationships that are real. And that means also having conflicts and difficult times and hardships.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's important for all of us to hear, Tal, because when we think our relationship is in conflict or we have a disagreement with a friend, a partner, a child, a parent, a work colleague, as you said, it doesn't mean that that relationship is in trouble or a bad or an unhealthy relationship. It's really how we deal with all of that negativity and conflict. In fact, in my own long-term study, Tal, there were 12 couples in year one who said, "We never have conflict." None of those couples were together in year three. So not allowing disagreement, negativity isn't very good. So I totally agree with you. And a very, very important thing to allow unhappiness in our lives and accept it in our relationships and within us. Okay, you were giving us some other ways to boost our mood. Are there other steps that we can do?
So, you know, one of the things that we neglect today is the mind-body connection. So regular physical exercise, for example, turns out to be not just important for physical health, it's extremely important, perhaps even more so, for mental health. So regular exercise, as little as 3 times a week of aerobic training has the same effect on us as our most powerful psychiatric medications. You know, so many people are wondering, why are levels of depression going up? Why are so many kids, more kids today, are experiencing attention deficit and attention deficit hyperactivity disorders? And the answer is in part, not totally, but in part, because we are exercising less, we're moving less. There is a direct connection between how often we move, how much exercise we introduce into our lives, and how happy or depressed we are.
Very good. So you're telling listeners then to get up out of their seats and walk, hike, do aerobics, bike, get out and exercise, because it's going to have physical and psychological benefits.
Yes. And you know, you said get out of their seats. Get out of your seat, even if it's not for a hike or a run. You know, so some doctors today are talking about sitting as the new smoking. Now, they may be exaggerating, but only a little bit, because sitting does have real negative consequence, sitting for hours and hours on end, as many of us are doing in our on our desk jobs. That has impact for our, once again, happiness as well as physical health. So every 30 minutes, you know, just get up and take 10, 20 steps. When you, you know, when you go for lunch, after lunch, walk up the stairs instead of taking the elevator, if possible. You know, so it's these little, what Dan Buettner calls inconveniences, that are actually important for sustaining a positive mood as well as health.
That's great. And these are very simple things that we can do ourselves. Other strategies that you talk about in your book to boost our mood and quality of life.
Yeah, so this is once again connected both to happiness as well as to healthy relationships. And this is giving, kindness, generosity. So there's some fascinating research conducted at Harvard University and the University of British Columbia, comparing how we spend or different ways of spending our money. So one group was given a nice amount of money and told to spend it on themselves. A second group was given the exact same amount of money and told to spend it on others, whether it's charity, whether it's buying a gift for someone or whatever it is, on yourself or on someone else. And while both groups enjoyed a spike in terms of their levels of happiness as a result of spending that money, the second group, the group that spent it on others, that spike lasted significantly longer. And we're talking 1 day to 7 days, in comparison to 7 days or longer when you give others. So giving is receiving. Helping others is helping ourselves. Two sides of the same coin.
I like that a lot. And so really being generous and kind and giving to others not only helps us and affects our health and well-being, but it also affects others. What a simple thing, again, that we can do to help and boost our own happiness. Now, I know in the book, you talk about curiosity and that curious people are healthier and they even may live longer. What's that all about, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, I find that research fascinating. It's quite recent that it came out. So people who are learning, who are asking questions, who are watching lectures, who are listening to radio shows that teach them something about something, they are not only happier, they're not only more successful, they're also healthier, their immune system is stronger, they're likely to live longer. And I find that fascinating because it's a win-win. You enjoy it. By nature, we enjoy learning new things, and we benefit from it in the long term as well. And again, it can be anything. Just like with relationships, the benefits of relationship can come through work or home or romantic or other relationships. The same with curiosity. You can learn about relationships, or you can learn neuroscience or Sanskrit. It actually doesn't matter. But follow your bliss, as Campbell said. You know, follow the things that you enjoy learning about.
Right. And, you know, if you listeners decide to learn or be curious about some kind of physical activity like dance or other kinds of physical exercise that would combine both the mind-body connection or the exercise as well as the curiosity, we'd check two things off that would impact our happiness. And now, Tom, when you're talking about happiness and boosting our mood, what are you talking about? What is the effect psychologically or emotionally?
Yes, so, you know, there are many ways to define happiness, and different people define it in different ways. The definition that I found most useful is actually one by Helen Keller. Now, Helen Keller wrote over 100 years ago about her definition of happiness as wholeness. In other words, what she looked at was the whole person. Now, what is the whole person? A whole person, we are emotions, but we're not only emotions. We also have our cognitive and rational mind. We're also a body that is connected to the mind. We're also social beings. In other words, relationships are critical, and we're also spiritual beings in search of meaning and purpose in life. So looking at happiness from these perspectives, from the perspective of spiritual well-being, physical well-being, intellectual well-being, relational, and finally emotional well-being, looking at happiness through all these lenses is very helpful. Now, that doesn't mean we need to have it all, or we can have it all. But even if we take up one of these lenses, say if it's the intellectual, by learning new things, indulging in our curiosity, and it could be the physical, by exercising regularly, or it can be relational. Even taking one and focusing on it at any given time, that will enhance our happiness levels.
Now, your barber, Avi, that you have these conversations with, and you wrote the book about these conversations, was he happy? And did that affect as well your own happiness?
Yeah, very much so. So, you know, the nice thing about happiness is that it's contagious. Smiles are contagious. A negative mood is contagious. You know, we know of people who come into a room and light it up. We also know people who come into a room and sap the energy. The thing, though, is that we have a choice, and we can become, and this was made very clear to me by Avi, we can become positive generators of energy, of happiness, of joy. And all it takes is a decision. This was one of the main ideas that I talk about in the book, and that Avi communicates, and that is our having a choice. At every moment in our life, we have a choice. We have a choice whether to be kind and generous to other people, you know, nice and pleasant. We have a choice also in terms of how we sit. You know, Avi would often, you know, when he cut my hair or children's hair, he would ask us to sit up straight. Now, he did it, at least it seems that he did it, because it's more convenient for him to cut our hair this way.
Right.
But it's not just for that.
Right.
It's also because, you know, if you sit up straight, feel better than if you're slouched. And these small decisions, these small choices that we make a big difference.
And so tell us a little bit more about these conversations. I know you just gave the example of, you know, he told you or he told children to sit up straight. In talking with him, was it messages that he gave you that inspired you to write this book, or was it stories that he told you? What was going on when you were talking with him that, you know, he inspired you for two full years then to write this book?
Yeah, well, Terry, I must say, inspired me for much longer than two full years. It's just that, you know, I was eager to get the book out, so I stopped, but it could have gone on for very long. And, you know, he didn't know about me writing the book. And the reason was because I didn't want him to lose his authenticity. So for 2 years, it was a, you know, complete secret. You know, only my wife knew, the whole world. She was the only one who knew I was writing it. But then I told him, and he stayed the same. He really hasn't changed. And this is what, you know, I love about him, is authenticity. And the way he teaches is through, yes, stories and also by example. He walks the talk. So he's not afraid to be sad, for example. He himself, you know, he never graduated from high school, and yet he's always learning. He's always taking courses, whether it's language courses or business courses or self-help courses. He's always learning. He's always and he shares his learning and he shares his experience. So it's by example. Whenever I encountered him, I always thought about Gandhi's famous quote, "Be the change you want to see in the world." He wants a kinder world, and he indeed is kind. You know, he wants a world where people are curious and learn, and he learns and he's curious. You know, he wants a world where people invest in relationships, and he certainly invests in relationships, leading by example.
And so that's a nice message as well. If listeners are in a relationship, let's say a romantic relationship, and they want to inspire happiness or change in a partner, that they can learn from just what you said and the message you gave us, or Avi gave you, which is lead by example. So if you want your partner, child, parent, or friend to be happy, be a changed person, then you need to lead by example.
Yes, exactly. And lead by example with persistence. You know, it's very easy in a relationship to say, well, you know, I was nice yesterday and she wasn't nice back to me. So there you go. You know, this is unfair. Very easy to do that. However, if we persist with kindness, if we persist with generosity, if we persist with openness, over time, the other person will open up, will be more kind and more generous, usually. Mm-hmm. So it's about persistence. And as you said at the beginning, it's about doing those little things over and over and over again. That's why they're so valuable and so much more important than that one big thing once in a blue moon.
Absolutely. That is wonderful. And I like that because that's what I've been all about as well, Tal, is that the simple, consistent behaviors in romantic relationships are really what keeps people happy and stable over time. Now, we only have a few minutes left, just two more minutes. And I know that we have many business people in our audience as listeners, and you explore how happiness is intertwined with our business lives. Can you expand on that briefly?
Sure. You know, there's a common misconception today that the path to happiness lies in success. That if you become more successful, wealthier, if you get more prestigious work and so on, then you'll be happier. And while success does lead to happiness, it only leads to a temporary spike. Temporary. Now, if we want to increase our levels of happiness on a consistent basis, we have to look elsewhere but success. But while success doesn't lead to lasting happiness, if we increase our happiness levels, we enjoy more success. So if you have people who are more optimistic and more positive in an organization, they'll be more creative. They'll be more productive, more engaged in their work. Teamwork will improve significantly. In other words, happiness is a good investment. Happiness pays for organizations. Now, how do you increase happiness in organizations? In a very similar way to other domains, whether it's a school or home. For example, employees in organizations who consistently appreciate their progress. This is work by Harvard professor Teresa Amabile. What she talked about is the progress principle. People who appreciate, in other words, don't take for granted what they do well or what their coworkers do well, they actually do better. Their organizations do better over time. And this is, again, very similar to a relationship. If we appreciate, whether it's ourselves and or our partners, our relationship becomes better. So appreciation.
I love that.
Critical.
And small, simple behaviors, words to the people we work with, whether it be coworkers or our supervisors, will also then lead to happiness and boost people's mood, which equals success. I love that, Tal, because you're taking the same principles and applying them to many areas of our life, our lives in general. So thank you so much for joining us, Tal. I really enjoy talking to you. I feel happier as well, so I appreciate that.
Thank you, Terry, and thank you for all the wonderful work that you're doing.
Oh, you as well. Thank you. And again, listeners, if you want more information about Dr. Tal Ben-Shahar and his new book, Shortcuts to Happiness, Life-Changing Lessons from My Barber, go to talbenshahar.com, talbenshahar.com. And as always, thanks for listening. I appreciate you. I'm Dr. Terry, and this is the Love Doctor program on Empower Radio. I'm here to help your relationships be the best they can be. My personal website is Dr. Terry, thelovedoctor.com. But until next time, listeners, here's to your healthy, happy relationships.